All right. Hey, Fritz Bergen, bloodandfaith.com. It's the end of November. And I was recently listening to Michael Yon. And he said something, this was a few months ago. He's a guy, he's a war correspondent. He goes around the world and he talks about all the crazy things going on. Invasion from the southern border, wars overseas and whatnot. But he said, and it really struck with me, he said, if your paradigm fails to be predictive, you need to change your paradigm. Another way of saying that is if you keep saying, I can't believe they did that. I just don't understand that. I'm so surprised. Surely this is an aberration, and things keep going the same way. Well, then you've got a mixed up paradigm. And I find myself in that boat. As things go on and things get, well, I even hate to say this. I even hate to say as things get worse. But as the crazy becomes crazier and the insane becomes normal, I keep finding myself saying, I can't believe this. I don't understand this. What's wrong with people? When are they going to wake up? And so besides telling myself that they have a problem, if I listen to Michael Yon, what I had to do is wake up and say, what's my problem? Why am I so surprised all the time? Why am I wrong all the time? Why do I think things wouldn't go this way? And the answer, according to what he said, I don't know where he picked it up, but I'll be happy to give him credit for, is maybe my paradigm is wrong. What's a paradigm? It's a way of understanding the world. It's the assumptions you make about society and the people around you. It's your framework. And so if you think everybody is lovey and wonderful, well, you're going to be shocked and surprised when evil happens consistently and on a regular basis. And that's where I find myself. So I want to title this podcast, I Am Wrong, or I Was Wrong, or I've Been Wrong, and I'm struggling to come up with a new paradigm for it. I'm basically an optimist. I basically trust people. I basically like people. I basically think people are good. And I think that's part of the problem. And then I go out and I look at what's going on in society and all these crazy things are happening. And I go, well, maybe there's something wrong with my merit paradigm. Here's what surprised me. They stole the 2020 election. You may not disagree. You may disagree. That's fine. That's the conclusion I've come to. And I can base that on the 1960 election. The 1960 election was stolen from Richard Nixon. This is a matter of history, a matter of academic acceptance. It was the Richard Daley, a political organization in Chicago, that turned the last screws on the Nixon presidency in 1960. Now, you may say, well, that was a great thing. Nixon was a bad guy. Well, that's not my point. My point is that stealing elections is nothing new. It's been going on for half a century or more, at least, and one ought not to be surprised. The election of 2022, all the crazy things that have gone on in Arizona and Pennsylvania, stealing elections there. The fact that we have utterly open borders, and the Border Patrol has been told to stand down and allow millions and millions and millions of foreign invaders into our country. You go, how can this be? How can this possibly be? You got the massive debt and the destruction of the U.S. dollar. I mean, there's no way this is going to survive. That's why you have the rise of BRICS. You have the rise of alternative methods of international settlement. We are quickly on a path of U.S. dollar losing its reserve currency status. It's severely undermined now, and the pressure will continue. There's absolutely no sense of fiscal responsibility whatsoever. It's print money. We're in a war against Russia. The United States and NATO are in a war against Russia. Why? I guess this is my point. I'm going, why? What do we have to do with the Ukraine? As I just don't understand it. And what are we risking? And they're blowing up pipelines. They're blowing up bridges. They're undermining the economy of Europe. And I don't care if Russia is the bad guy or the good guy, or the Ukrainians are the good guys or the bad guys. That's not my point. My point is, why are we in a war? We're going to save the world from what? we've got, it's normal to demonize whites. If you spoke about blacks, or let's say Jews, let's do something good. If you spoke about Jews, the way people speak about whites, well, you get deplatformed, you get demonified. You would lose your job. You would have your Kanye. You'd have your Apple Pay shut down. You'd lose your endorsements. If you spoke anything against the Jews, those who call themselves Jews but are liars, according to Jesus Christ, Revelation 2:9 or Revelation 3:9, you're going to be severely attacked, and you're going to pay an economic price for that. Where does this demonization of whites come from? I know where it comes from. It goes back to Genesis 3:15, and I've talked about that. I've written about that, and I will continue to write about that. We are the sons and daughters of Christendom. We're the sons and daughters of Christendom, of a Christian civilization, and that entire civilization has been under attack for 3 centuries. That gives me a clue on how I can change my paradigm. We've got the demonization of Christians. I mentioned some time ago they had homosexual ceremony at a church in Texas, and the preacher was up there repenting for Christian supremacy. And then you got little Jamie Raskin. He's another person who calls himself a Jew, and he says we have to defeat Russia because Russia's for Christian and traditional values. It's the demonization of Christianity, unless you're a Judeo-Christian. And I've written about that recently quite a bit. You're jailing patriots. You're jailing Americans who, I guess, were in the wrong place at the wrong time, January 6th. They gave me heat about that. I had negative implications to myself because of January 6th. I wasn't even on the same continent. Don't even know anybody that was there. I guess it was just a convenient catch-all to drag people into the middle of a roundup and punish them for having the perception of doing something wrong. Meanwhile, BLM and Antifa, who caused billions of dollars, weapons of mass destruction, if you believe Molotov cocktails were, burning down cities, burning down buildings, attacking U.S. government facilities, attacking the police, getting off scot-free. The universities have become cesspools of evil. And I'll just say it. Evil doesn't exist outside of people. So I've got to, again, change my narrative, change my paradigm, and say, you know what? It's not just ideas that are evil or things that are evil, but people are evil. People are evil. And if you go back and you look at the Hebrew scriptures, what most people call the Old Testament, which is fine. It's just, I don't like that term because people say, well, we replace the Old Testament with the New Testament, but that has nothing to do with the scriptures. It has to do with the covenant. The Hebrew scriptures, Genesis through Malachi, are as relevant today as they ever have been. Jesus Christ only quoted the Hebrew scriptures. So those are just as relevant as ever. But these universities, and anyway, in those scriptures, it's not just ideas are evil, but people are evil. People are evil. Civilizations are evil. Cultures are evil. Religions are fundamentally evil. And if you don't believe me, go read the story of ancient Israel and go look at how they're brought out of Egypt. Egypt is destroyed. The firstborn of the Egyptians are destroyed. The ancient sons of Israel, they had their problems. They had many problems, and they were stuck in the wilderness. And God killed tens of thousands of them because they were evil. They said, well, how can they be evil? Why were they evil? Well, they rebelled against Jesus Christ. They rebelled against God. Make no mistake, the God that met with Moses is Jesus Christ, pre-incarnation. And these were evil people. And the rebellion of Dathan. Now, I imagine Dathan was a nice guy. I imagine he was a good, upstanding, outstanding man who probably had a nice family and was responsible, did everything right. But he said, Moses, I don't recognize you. I do not recognize you as you're not the boss of me. Basically, he said, you're not the boss of me. So when Moses summoned him, he said, you're not the boss of me. I'm going to you. You come to me. You want to see me? You come to me. And literally the ground opened up and he was swallowed whole into hell. Him and his wife and his kids, his tents, his sheep, his donkeys, everything that belonged to him. Now, I say to myself, man, that's kind of crazy. But it goes on. As the sons of Israel are to march into the promised land, they're to slaughter the people. And it's like, holy mackerel. Let's go back to the Great Flood. With the Great Flood, the violence filled the earth. God found one righteous man. His name was Noah. He was upright in his generation. Everything else was wiped out. And so right there is a clue in how I need to change my paradigm. Stop thinking that everybody's good and innocent and pure and holy, and they have good motives. I need to think to myself, they have evil motives. They have wrong motives. The primary motive inside of the heart of man is turned towards evil. There's no one good. There's no one just. There's no one, not even one. I'm talking myself into a new paradigm. They're evil. They're fundamentally evil. Unless they're converted. Unless they fear Jesus Christ. I don't mean fear God in a general sense. Fear Jesus Christ. You want to fear God, you fear Jesus Christ. If you don't fear Jesus Christ, you don't fear God. If you don't have the Son, you don't have the Father. If you don't respect the Son, you don't respect the Father. If you reject the Son, you reject the Father. It is all about Jesus Christ. It's fundamentally all about Jesus Christ. These university professors, and I've taught at universities. I've been an adjunct professor. And I went through the whole program. I know what's going on. It's just gotten worse. I mean, back it was bad then. I had my mentors, tenured professors, say that the reason of all the evil in the world is white Christian men from Europe. Christian men from Europe. The white Christian men from Europe. Straight white Christian men from Europe were the cause of all the evil. I mean, they're just taught it. It's just you're just supposed to accept this stuff. I didn't take it personally, but I should have, because now it's mainstream. It's a demonic teaching that the sons and daughters of Christendom are fundamentally evil. Where does that come from? Comes from Genesis 3:15. And if you want a more recent examination of that, go see the relationship between Jesus Christ and those that wanted to kill him. More recent than that, go read the book of Acts and see who wanted to stifle the gospel of Jesus Christ and kill the Christians and jail the Christians. Very specific people that wanted to do that. Very specific. And I've been raised in a culture and with values that were pretty much the opposite of what I say today. I know I make references to my mother. She was a Christian lady, you know, evangelical, charismatic, Christian lady, women's aglow, whole nine yards. And, oh, God, they just worshiped the people that call themselves Jews, regardless of how openly Antichrist they were. And it wasn't just her group of people. If you read some of the things I've talked about recently, you go back and you read about, quote-unquote, anti-Semitism in the New Testament, and you read about how the Talmud people are very explicit. They're very forward. They say, listen, the Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, and the all the scriptures of the New Testament are fundamentally anti-Semitic, and we have to either wipe that out or we have to convince our quote-unquote brothers, Christian brothers, that those have no meaning and cause them to reinterpret it. And they brag about how they have the oral law, which subverts the written law. These Talmud people brag about the usefulness of the oral law to subvert what the Holy Scriptures say. They're open about it. And they said, we just got to convince these Christians to go our way and have them make sure they have oral traditions that fundamentally undermine what the Holy Scriptures say. Now, you want a scriptural reference for that? It's Matthew 15, 1 through 9. And they're open about it. And you've got a huge movement in the Christian church, evangelical church, mainline church, denouncing the Holy Scriptures, denouncing. I'm going to put it this way. You can't denounce the words of Jesus Christ and not denounce Jesus Christ. So when you denounce the words of Jesus Christ, you denounce Jesus Christ. These are Judeo-Christians. These men are Judeo-Christians. Judaism is Antichrist. These are Talmudic Christians. And they're so happy that they're friends with the world. They're so happy that they have the approval of he who rejects the Father and the Son, he who denies that the Messiah has already come in the flesh, which is the definitions, two definitions of the Antichrist. 1 John 2:22, 2 John verses 7 through 11. There's only one chapter in 2 John. And you just go, how can this be? Well, I've got to change my paradigm. I got to change my paradigm. I have to understand this, that this malignancy is strong and it's growing and it's going to get stronger. How is it that television went from what it was, I don't know, black and white? I mean, back then, black and white Star Trek was rather risque with Captain Jim Kirk crawling out of bed with some, you know, scantily clad woman in green skin laying there. That was pretty racy for the 1960s. But now you have open homosexuality normalized, not only for adult TV, but for children's TV. And you look at the preponderance of homosexuals in the news media, and why is that? They're normalizing this stuff. They're not. How is it that you have now in grade school, junior high school, high school, the normalization of LGBTQ and the outlaw of praying in the name of Jesus Christ and the outlaw of the Ten Commandments? Evil has been normalized, and they're going down and they're attacking children. There's an utter hatred of the sons and daughters of Christendom. There's an utter hatred of Jesus Christ and the Word of God. And there's an open movement by the Talmud people to eliminate the words of Jesus Christ and the books called the New Testament. And they're open about it. There was an article in one of the British newspapers here out of London, and they said, hey, we want, from now on, any Bible that's published, we want that to have warning labels next to every scriptures saying that this is a hate warning. You know, beware, this is a hate speech. Revelation 2:9, Revelation 3:9, John 8:44, Matthew 12:34, Matthew 33:15, Matthew 23:15, Matthew 23:33. We've got to have, you know, 1 Thessalonians 2:15. We need hate speech warnings next to all these scriptures, they say. And, you know, I've said this for years. I said, you know, if people ever read the Bible, it'll become illegal. Well, we're right there. Some court in England just said, well, you know, you can't read the Bible out loud because it might offend somebody. Canada, they've got medically assisted death made, they call it. Medically assisted and induced death. Murder-suicide. It's a murder-suicide program in Canada. 3% of the deaths, I think, in 2020 were from medically assisted murder and suicide. 3%. Pretty phenomenal. Pretty high number. So evil is no longer an aberration. It's widespread. It's totally powerful. What was normal in 1950, 1960, 1970, even 1980 is forbidden. Remember, Hillary Clinton came out and she was against homosexual marriage when she ran for it, against homosexual marriage. Now she would, she'd never make the Democrat nomination. How did that happen so quickly? And then the bigger question for me is, how do I reconcile all this with the idea that we're going to build Christian nations? It's almost like what's the name of the kid that put his thumb in the dike, trying to keep the floodwaters from coming in? Obviously, I'm losing. If the battle's just for me, I'm losing. It's like standing in front of a hurricane and saying, stop! You won't blow this way anymore. And so I have to figure out a way to deal with this. And do I believe in Christian nations? Absolutely, 100%. And I've gone over those scriptures with you. All the world will bow the knee to Jesus Christ. All the nations will serve Jesus Christ explicitly. Every knee will bow and every tongue will confess to the glory of the Father that Jesus Christ is Lord. He's King of all the kings. He's Lord of all the lords. He's not Lord of one nation. He's Lord of all the nations. The nation and the kingdom which will not serve him will be destroyed. Now, how do I reconcile that with what's going on today? Well, those are the questions I'm working on. I mean, I know how a lot of evangelicals do it, and you know, I've been fighting them. I've been fighting them, well, at least in my own mind. I've been talking trash about their eschatology, where the world's going to get worse and worse, and the devil's taking over, and then they're gonna fly away. Well, on one hand, I can say, well, okay, the world's gotten worse and worse. I guess they're right on that part. And part of what I'm thinking is it getting worse and worse because the Christians have bad theology? And I guess that's kind of where I've parked myself. I said the reason where it's getting worse is not because the devil's doing what the devil's doing, but because the church isn't doing what the church should be doing. And that's where I've parked myself. I've said to myself, the reason it's getting worse isn't because Satan's being Satan. It's because the church is not being the church. And that the church has so reduced the gospel of Jesus Christ that it's not effective anymore. It's not any good anymore. When you deny Jesus Christ, when entire sections of the Christian church deny Jesus Christ, what? What, is God supposed to bless that? I don't think so. How do they deny him? They deny his words. If you deny the words of Jesus Christ, you deny Jesus Christ. If you deny Revelation 2:9, Revelation 3:9, John 8:44. And remember, all the scriptures are inspired by the Spirit of Jesus. 1 Thessalonians 2:15 is inspired by the Spirit of Jesus Christ. When you start denying Jesus Christ, and yet you want the blessing of Jesus Christ, I don't think that works. And that's where I've parked myself. And I still hold to that. And yet still, I find myself utterly amazed at the depravity of man. Utterly amazed. Astounded. I can't believe it's getting worse and worse and worse. So where does that leave me? Well, it leaves me deep in thought. Deep in thought enough to talk about these things on a podcast. I don't have all the answers. I think I have some of the answers, and that's why I talk about what I talk about. I think there is a disease in the church that suggests that the church can go the way the Talmud people and simply ignore the Holy Scriptures that they don't like and overrule it with the tradition of man. That's Phariseeism. That's Talmudism. That's modern rabbinical Judaism. That's what the Talmud is. They overlay the Holy Scriptures with their traditions. I think the evangelical church is way down that road. And so you go, how? Why should God bless those who deny his son, Jesus Christ? How do they deny his son? By denying his words. But there's great evil out there. Great evil. I guess I have to go back to 2,000 years ago. Imagine that. You murder the Messiah. You murder the Messiah. You murder the Son of God. You murder Jesus Christ. You deny him and you murder him. I'm just freeforming here. What role does the evangelical church play in that spirit when they deny the words of Jesus Christ? Are many Christians embedded in the great harlot, the great whore? Revelation 18:4. Jesus Christ says, come out of her, man. Come out of her. Come out of Babylon. Come out of her. Don't share her plagues. He wouldn't say that unless the church was in the wrong place. So there you go. There you go. Things are difficult. Things are bad. I don't think we can expect them to turn around until and unless the church embraces what Jesus Christ said. And if I can correlate my own difficulties with certain people to the fact that I say what the Holy Scripture says, well, maybe I'm over target. Because I've said before, if you're playing in the Antichrist sandbox, he leaves you alone. You want to feed the poor, heal the sick, bang on your drums, have a little singing club, no problem, no issues. Oh boy, you go out there and you say what Jesus Christ said, what the Holy Scriptures say. They don't like that. But you know what? They didn't like that when Jesus Christ said. They didn't like that when Stephen said. They didn't like that when John and Peter and James said that. But guess what happens? Jerusalem is utterly destroyed in 70 AD. The temple is utterly destroyed in AD. Those are good things. Those are good things. The gospel of Jesus Christ expands. The gospel of the kingdom expands. And all of Europe is converted to Jesus Christ. So regardless of how bad it is, Jesus Christ is my role model. So are James and John and Peter. Regardless of how bad it is, I get how bad it is. Go read the book of Acts. And when the church doesn't receive any persecution from the Antichrist, I can only conclude that the church has surrendered. But we're waking up. We're waking up. We're going to turn on the light. Fritz Bergen, bloodandfaith.com, out.